We're heading to Washington for our weekly look at national politics with USA Today's Washington correspondent Paul Singer.
The House is voting on their budget today. It's employing a unique tactic to appease Republicans who want more defense spending and Republicans who don't.
Also, the new president of Afghanistan is speaking at a joint session in Congress after news yesterday that the United States will slow its withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan in 2015. Paul Singer joins us every Wednesday at this time. Paul, welcome back.
Hello, Veronica. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Well, let's start by talking budget. What's going on with the House vote on the budget today?
Oh, who knows? It's the, the mysteries of Congress. They couldn't really decide how to solve their problem of wanting several different things at once. They wanted a lean, austerity kind of budget that didn't spend too much money. They wanted to somehow get around the sequester caps so that they could raise spending for the Pentagon. And since they weren't able to figure out how to do those things at the same time, they put them in two different bills, and they'll vote on all of them. And this is Congress at its most entertaining. They are going to have what they call a Queen of the Hill series of votes. Well, they'll vote on several different budget scenarios, and the one that gets the most votes wins. And so what we think they'll do is they'll pass a budget that is austere and does not include the defense spending, and then they'll vote on the next one, which is the same budget with the defense spending, and that'll get more votes than the last one, so they'll call that the winner.
It sounds like kind of a Baroque way to do things. What is sort of the point of going through that exercise?
Oh, you know, politics. The advantage is that it gives everybody an opportunity to say, I voted to do X and Y. You know, that was my preferred option, and so they can say, I voted for the preferred option, and they don't have to just vote no on the last option. And the last option's funny also because It's a budget bill that would include, I think it's a $2 billion increase for defense spending, but it's off the books. It doesn't count. It's magic money. So you need, if your budget is supposed to balance, you know, it's supposed to balance spending and revenues, you just hide a bunch of money in some account that is not part of the calculation. So the $2 billion literally doesn't count as if it was spent magically.
Is this kind of fun for you as someone who watches this to see all of this? I mean, the Queen of the Hill for one thing, and
And then in the Senate we'll have what they call a votorama, which is starting tomorrow, because they can't figure out how to come to a deal either. They're just going to allow votes on dozens of amendments, and it'll take them like all night. Wait. For, I don't know, 30 hours of voting.
Vote around. You didn't just make that up. That's a real thing.
I did not. No. I did not make that up. Vote around. Ask any nerd who spent too much time in Washington, and they'll tell you what a vote around is.
All right. Well, what's next for the budget after the House votes?
Well, I mean, the Senate's got to vote. The House has to vote. They have to sit down, and then they have to come up with some kind of a deal because they'll have two different bills. They've got to negotiate them out. And then, of course, they have to get those two passed through the House and the Senate. And the deadline is April 15th, in theory. And, of course, it's all non-binding. This is one of those things where the budgets that pass don't really do anything. It's just sort of an outline that then Congress tries to stick to when they set up the spending bills for the year. So, full of sound and fury signifying nothing.
It doesn't have the potential to be influential, at least as a document to refer to as the year progresses.
Yeah. Well, that's why they pass them. I mean, the whole idea is it's supposed to kind of give the outlines of how the budget's going to unfold, and it does set the spending caps for each of the committees that's responsible for, appropriations bills. Really it's symbolic and it's political. I mean, it gives everybody an opportunity to say, I voted for a budget that does X and Y, or conversely, I did not vote for a budget that would have done X and Y. In this case, these are both Republican budgets, so the Democrats are looking at them as, these things would slash Medicare. They would convert it into a privately funded program, or a privately operated program instead of a government entitlement. We don't want to vote for that. And so for them, for Democrats, an opportunity to say, see, that's what Republicans want to do. And for Republicans, it's an opportunity to say, see, that's what we want to do. But it doesn't actually do what they want it to do. It just says they do.
Well, so speaking of going on the record, there's been a lot of wrangling back and forth over wording about abortion and some bills that don't seem to have that much to do explicitly with abortion. What's going on there?
It's an old saw, and I teach my students this problem, is if you want to, you know, make a mess out of a bill, you just add, you know, two words referring to abortion. In this case, there is a standing amendment that gets attached to the spending bill every year that says no federal funding should be expended to provide abortions. And some of the Republicans have decided to add versions of that language to other bills. And Democrats have resisted because they believe that it is extending those limits into other areas where they don't currently apply, or making it more permanent, or whatever. It's in theory, it should just be restating what is existing law, but Democrats believe that in some cases it is in fact extending the law and limiting abortions more. So Republicans have added this language to two different things. One is a bill on human trafficking that had a lot of bipartisan support, and the other is a bill they thought they had a deal on what's called the DOC fix. It's something way too complicated for me to explain, but it has something to do with making sure that Medicare reimbursement rates for doctors don't suddenly plummet. Well, both those bills were moving along, and then they added this abortion language, and then an argument ensued, and then the bills both stopped. Now, I am told just in the past little while that there may be a deal to change that language in such a way that it's less offensive to Democrats, and that will liberate those bills, but I haven't seen how that works yet.
Right now, we're getting our weekly dose of news from Capitol Hill with Paul Singer in our On Congress segment. And, Paul, you're talking about these bills being bipartisan in large part, the human trafficking bill. So what are advocates of the bill doing? I mean, what options do they have? Well, this abortion language, which isn't really central to the bill, is holding it up.
Well, no, they don't really have much. I mean, all they can do is turn to the sponsors of the amendments and say, take it off the bill. You're screwing up something that would be otherwise worthwhile. And, of course, the sponsors of the amendments are going to say, no, though, you know, we have to make sure that this bill does not violate our opposition to abortion. And it becomes, again, a political showdown less than a policy showdown. And the funny thing about the human trafficking bill is apparently the language is in there for a couple of weeks, and the Democrats just failed to notice. And then it came down to the last, you know, moment to vote, and they were like, wait a minute, what is this language here? Hold it. We don't like that. We can't support that. So, you know, it's just part of this is just part of the dance. You know, Republicans who are particularly, you know, strong advocates of getting rid of abortion are looking for every opportunity to do so. And anytime they can make a statement like that on a bill that's likely to pass, they're going to take that opportunity.
And disapproval of the goings on in Congress, you know, that's at a high lately. Is this the sort of thing that you can point to say, look, here's something that has support and yet it's being held up?
Yeah, you know, and you know, the sad thing is that, and I'll take some blame for this. This is what I do for a living. You know, we write about the stuff that is heavy on the conflict, and you know, these are the stories that end up occupying all of the conversation. It's not whether or not you can pass a simple bill to do something smart on trafficking. It's, you know, how much wrangling you're going to do over abortion. I mean, yeah, you may or may not have noticed that the Afghan president is speaking in front of the U.S. Congress today, and, you know, it seems like that news story gets more or less buried because nobody cares anymore. But when Netanyahu spoke and everybody was angry and it was a, you know, who's poking who in the eye, it dominated the news for 3 days.
All right. Well, let's not bury it anymore. Let's talk about that. What message does the president of Afghanistan have for Washington this week?
Well, he's got two messages. One is that I'm not Hamid Karzai. We were getting very frustrated with the previous leadership of Afghanistan, and I think the Americans are very, very glad to have a guy they think they can work with. And I think the second part of his message was that what he was saying is really expressing some gratitude for the amount of blood and money that the United States has spent trying to rescue Afghanistan from chaos. He came up with a deal with Obama yesterday that would basically slow down our withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan, leaving about 9,500 troops in Afghanistan for a little while longer, in part because I think the Americans now feel like they have a political partner they can rely on that they didn't have in Karzai. And so part of this speech and this presentation and this message was, this is a new day in the partnership. We can actually make some progress together. There is a future here that America wants to be part of. But again, it I'm sort of embarrassed at how quickly it emerges and disappears from all of our new news websites because it wasn't that exciting.
Have you heard any sort of feedback or play about the slowdown of the troop withdrawal in Afghanistan? Is it largely considered a good thing in Congress?
I think so, yeah. I mean, there has not been a great deal of objection. I mean, I suspect there will be some objection. I mean, it's difficult when you keep asking people to go back in the field, keep asking troops to go back in the field, right? I mean, that's going to continue to be a problem, and it's going to continue to generate some opposition. But no, I mean, there's been pretty much bipartisan support for the speech and for the new president. And, you know, I don't think there's been a great deal of objection to the idea of leaving some troops there and trying to make sure that we help Afghanistan remain stable.
And Paul, we've just got a little sliver of time left here, but some breathing room, it looks like, for President Obama on a nuclear deal with Iran. What's the latest there?
Yeah, it looks like the Congress is not in a hurry to vote on this, giving Obama a few more weeks. It looks like it'd be two or three more weeks before Congress is really firm on trying to take up a bill or something that would try and force Obama's hand. So they've given him a little more wiggle room to see if they can get a deal with Iran in the next couple of weeks.
Great. We'll leave it there. Paul, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Veronica. Talk to you soon.
We've been speaking with USA Today Washington correspondent Paul Singer. He joins us every Wednesday at this time to talk about the latest from Capitol Hill.